Hello, and welcome back to Parent is a Verb on OUradio.org. I'm Barry Holzer.
And I'm Hani Holzer.
And today we're here to talk to you about motivating your child. We're recently talking to parents and asked them, what did they want to hear about? And one of the topics that came up was, how do I motivate my child?
And it was interesting, when that came up, I was thinking about a lot of adolescents that I've seen in my office. And one of the things I always say to sometimes to the parents is that if there was a pill for apathy, I would give it to your child and probably 95% of their challenges would fade away. So what makes a child apathetic versus what can motivate a child to want to be their best and do their best?
And I think it's important to recognize that a healthy child is naturally inquisitive. Right? But every child is different. They have different interests. They have different ways of thinking. They have different strengths. Okay? And very often when we talk about a lack of motivation, you know, teachers have, you know, sometimes if your teacher says about your kid, you know, nothing motivates that child. Well, what they're really saying is,
I really don't know how to motivate your child.
To sit in my class and do the work that I want them to do. I can't motivate them to do math. Or I can't motivate them to study history, you know. But that doesn't mean that nothing motivates them. They are probably very motivated by sports or by video games.
Or something that might be very interesting to them.
Right. Maybe they're motivated by art or from music. Okay. So that, and every child, you know, is motivated by something. Okay? And if it was true that nothing motivated your child, then you probably need to seek professional help. Because if your child found no joy in anything they did, they would seem to sound to me pretty depressed.
Right, but we're not talking about any of that. We're talking about taking the regular, you know, healthy child and giving them the tools to be motivated.
And so the first thing I think we have to talk about is that, you know, the lack of motivation is often not that I don't want to do this, but I don't believe I can do this. Therefore, I don't want to. Or really another way of saying that I don't want to be frustrated, or I don't want to be embarrassed, or I don't want to feel like a loser.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I see this in my office all the time, especially parents who bring me their kids who are in, let's say, junior high school, who have attention problems, you know, and they seem very unmotivated. They're very inconsistent in class.
Well, they've really been beaten down by the system.
Right. And they basically, what I have to, my first job is to convince them is you can do this with my help. I'm going to show you that you really can be successful, because they're pretty convinced that nothing works and they're just, they can't do school, period. Okay? And so their lack of motivation is really a statement saying, I can't do it. And therefore, because I'm not going to say that I can't, because that would be embarrassing to state, even to myself.
It's like, I don't do it. I won't do it.
I don't feel like doing it. If I wanted to, I could.
Right. But you know what? I see this with adults sometimes also, especially around social issues, you know, socializing and fears or feeling inept at socializing. And telling the person they can do it, they just may not have the skills yet. Some, for some reason, somewhere along the way, they skipped that chapter and no one was able to model that for them, or they didn't learn it well enough. Giving them the confidence that, you know, yes, you can. You need the tools.
Right. And once you start having some success, you build on that success, because motivation is really just built on a success and accomplishment. Okay, it opens up avenues. If I'm successful and I feel I can be successful, I can get motivated to do more, because feeling a sense of accomplishment is very reinforcing.
Yes. If I succeed at it, then, wow, I want to do this again. You know, I learned how to swim. I can really swim laps. I want to swim even more laps. I want to get into the pool more often.
So the question is, how do we get a child to believe in their own abilities? That's the first step. Because they're saying, if they really believe they can do it, and they believe they're going to feel a sense of accomplishment, right, then they probably will.
Well, I think that probably is looking at each child as an individual and assessing their own individual strengths and abilities and then going with that and working with what they present with naturally. And sometimes it's not so obvious. Sometimes you really have to work on it to uncover what some of those abilities might be. And they might be in many different arenas. They might be in art, but we don't know about that yet because we haven't tested out their abilities in art. Or it might be in drama. It may not be academic, but if they can get some success in any area, then that's going to give them confidence that they can approach other things as well.
Right. I met a kid recently who, you know, just finishing ninth grade, has a terrible year because he really needs a good special education program that wasn't and hasn't found an appropriate one for him. And, you know, just school has been a disaster. He has significant learning disabilities and attention difficulties and so forth. But his music abilities are great. Mm. And he gets jobs all the time as one-man band to do parties.
Wow.
So that even though he's only about 14 years old, you know, 14 or 15, that part of his life is, he's very successful.
Right. So there's some area of success, which means when you have success in one area, it can breed success in other areas.
And so that keeps him motivated. Okay? And he spends a lot of time practicing music and working on it and, you know.
Right. What I would probably tell somebody like that if I met them is, I have no clue what music is. I don't even know how to read a note. And you not only can you read music, but you can entertain people with music. You have strengths. You have abilities. Now we just have to take these strengths and abilities and apply them in a different place.
Right. So, one of the important things you have to remember is, as usual, you know, we don't avoid criticizing, right? We want to encourage learning, okay? If a child thinks they're going to be put down for trying, they won't try. So we want to encourage children to try.
Well, what you're talking about is making it safe for them to try.
Yes. It's making it positive to take risks. Okay, that, you know, if I try, then maybe I'll fail.
And that's okay,
but at least you tried.
Right, it's because it's safe to try.
Right.
No one is going to do a character assassination if you try.
And the effort alone is valuable. The trying has a value in and of itself. Okay, and that's what we want to reinforce. Okay, And really, in terms of just teaching the ability to do things, I remember when I was an intern, you know, after medical school, actually even in the clerkships during medical school as a student, you know, the rules on, you know, on the hospital ward were see one, do one, teach one. And basically, any procedure, it's like, you know, they showed it to you once, you know, then they just watched you do it, okay? Then you were doing it on your own, and very soon you were teaching, you know, the next one to do it, you know, down the line.
So that's, you know, saying you can learn, you can have success, and not only can you have success, but then you can make other people successful too.
Right. And so the idea is not to do it for your child, but to show them how. Do it with them, watch them do it, and then let them fly.
I think that's an incredibly important point that we should kind of stop and look at for a minute, is not doing it for your child and resisting the urge to do it for your child. Because I've seen so many cases in my professional life, in my personal life, of parents getting overly involved and not having the faith in their child that they can do the project, that they can succeed, and they just instead do it for them. And that reinforces that they can't do it. The child can't do it. I have to do it for you.
And that really is counterproductive.
It's disabling.
Yes. Right. When parents do too much for children, one of the hardest parts of parenting is the ability to let go. You know, children start off, and children don't appreciate this until they become parents. But, you know, children start off as these totally helpless beings, and little by little, they gain independence, and we have to keep pulling, little by little, we have to keep pulling back until one day we let them go off on their own.
Right, and I always kind of think about it as like that toddler who's learning how to walk, because that really is literally letting your child go and fall again.
Right.
And again and again, and being okay with that child falling, because if we didn't let the child fall, they'd never learn how to walk. They'd never get up again.
So I think that this is the ability to really encourage and, you know, to take on reasonable challenges. Okay? And yeah, I think it's helpful if we guide them into, you know, to challenges that are challenges, that, you know, there's no guarantee, but are reasonable, that there's a good chance they're going to succeed. Okay? It doesn't pay to take on a challenge that is impossible for them, that's not age appropriate, let's say. But taking on, you know, reasonable challenges is really what you want your child to be able to do.
And I think also if we believe that the child can do it and we convey to them that they can do it, that very often will allow them to do it.
So, you know, we have to really find their passion. We have to find their strength. And then we also have to understand our child and know what makes them tick. Okay? Richard Lavoie wrote a book primarily really for schools on, you know, the motivation breakthrough of 6 secrets of turning on the tuned out child. But a lot of the stuff he talks about for teachers in schools applies to the kids in general and parents as well. And one of the things he talks about is determining a child's motivational type. What motivates your a child? Okay? And so some kids are more social and gregarious. You know, they're very verbal. They like to tell jokes. They're confident. They want to be popular. They like to be with their friends. They don't like to just be home alone. And some kids are, you know, more, you know, focused on being autonomous. You know, they want to be able to do and be productive.
And they enjoy working independently. And, you know, they have a good memory and they can put that into play.
Right. So this is a kid who might come home and read a book on their own or, you know, because it's a topic that they're interested in and they want to become proficient in. And they're just more, you know, motivated on their own to accomplish. Okay. There are some kids who are more into status.
Right. And they want to be fashionable. They need praise. They can be very critical of themselves. And, you know, they enjoy the spotlight. And they're also socially oriented, they're peer oriented.
So then if there's if there's something that's going to be recognized by others, okay, that's going to really motivate them. You know, I mean, some kids, a similar concept is kids who are motivated by recognition. Okay, that they just want to be, you know, they're competitive and, you know, goal driven, and, you know, they want people just to recognize them. Okay, and so they'll enjoy performing or getting up on stage or, you know.
It sounds like really it's the chanuch lena'ar al pi darko. It's finding looking at the individual as an individual and understanding them, and according to your understanding of this child and their strengths, moving them in that particular direction.
Right. But what happens is if I take a child who likes doing things on their own, all right, and wants the recognition, let's say, for doing things on their own, and then I'm going to push him into sort of a group project where he's going to be anonymous, it's not going to use his
abilities,
his personality,
mm-hmm.
to motivate him.
Right.
Okay? It's going to be harder for him to motivate himself because I'm not recognizing who he is in the process. But if I take a kid who is, you know, social and gregarious and likes to be recognized, and I put him in a project that has to do with a bunch of other people and where he'll get recognition for what he's doing and so forth, you know, it's self-motivating then because it fits who he is. You know, I mean, there are kids who are just very inquisitive. They just want to know everything. They read a lot of books and read on different topics, and you know, they remember everything, or you know,
and finding something for them to research that they don't know anything about yet would probably suit their needs.
Right. I mean, that's the type of kid who's, you know, if they're good enough, is going to do an Intel project in high school, or you know, but just, you know, encouraging them to shine on, you know, the science, you know, competition in school.
And when they're younger, it's giving them, you know, the electric fan when it's not plugged in to take apart and see if they can put it back together again.
Right. Okay. And some kids, and we know a lot of kids like this, who are really about, you know, sort of, They want a sense of power and being in charge. Okay? They want to take control. You know, and they, unfortunately, they often get involved in power struggles with parents or teachers or others, but they seem to be, you know, they're leaders and self-confident, and also rather independent and competitive. And you want to take these qualities and use them
to their advantage.
To their advantage.
Absolutely. And those are really great qualities to encourage and to bring out and to channel.
Right. Exactly. So we want to channel these qualities. And so, you know, we can do different things to really help channel these qualities. For some kids, it's, in other words, you might, let's say, use, put it this way. People often, let's take the people typically do. The most typical approach, I think, to motivating kids is to use prizes or rewards. Okay? Now, I do this a lot with parents, but what I explain to parents is, prizes, if the prize itself is so big that I just want that prize, okay, then the children will just be motivated to get the prize.
So they're not really gaining that much in terms of internalizing.
Right. It's going to be less internalized. On the other hand, if a prize is really more symbolic, okay, or the prize is really more a connection. So the prize is we'll go out for pizza. Okay, we'll spend time together. We'll go to the park and play ball.
Or we'll go to a ball game together.
Or we'll go to the ball game. Or if the prize is really, I think I've used this example before with my son's third grade Rebbe, who used to give out little tickets for davening nicely and learning or saying something good or whatever it is. And every, once a month we'd take out the store and all the kids would be able to take all their tickets and buy these little tchotchkes, for $10 you get 1,000 little prizes. The prizes really weren't worth much, and the kids really didn't care about the prizes. They cared about getting the cards, not what the cards bought, because the card meant that I was recognized and, that I was the teacher, my teacher who I care about, said I was good.
Right. It's internalizing that relationship, it's internalizing that success, and it's internalizing being motivated.
And so that's what, again, as we often state, as parents, we're the most important people to our children. And we can motivate just by showing our kids that we, by giving our approval to what they're doing, that we're interested in what they're doing, by rewarding that. And so if we use prizes that are really symbolic of our approval, okay, if I'm giving them lots of stars for, little prize, each star is meaningful. The prize is less meaningful. And then the reward approach really can work, because getting the star is more important than getting the prize. The other things, certainly this goes along with giving praise.
Being positive, being encouraging, saying you've done well, good job, those things are powerful. They get internalized. I'm often amazed, even till this very day, in working with people, that when I tell them or I praise them or I reflect the good that they've done or the progress they've made, it is very powerful. And then we see them, digging their heels into work even harder to do even better.
But, and especially for the child where the recognition is important and the sense of status is important, that's going to be all the more powerful. In other words, if I have a kid who's really, a people person, right, then, in other words, giving them something that's going to involve other people, right, giving them some sort of project or some, getting them involved in something that's a group project, where they can, it's really a very social thing, is going to be self-motivating. Just projects in general. I think very often we, if a child can have success in something that is extracurricular or not, core curriculum in school, even some of the projects that the teacher might give them, then sometimes you'll have kids where they get a project and they just take it on and they do this amazing thing with the project.
I'm thinking about that seventh grade project that are very often given to girls about the Lamed Tet Malachot, the 39, things that
creative acts on for Shabbos.
Right, and they have to do a scrapbook on that, and you give kids. I've seen Picasso, works of Picasso in those scrapbooks, and it's just something that you can give them, and they can be creative with, and they can succeed with, and each week it's something else.
Right. Well, that's another type of child. The child who's really artistic and creative will take a project like that and go to town.
What I think is interesting is that it's not just about being artistic, but it can be a very creative process.
And so that if it piques their interest in creativity, then they feel that that their creativity is now being called upon and useful and meaningful. So that even if they're not the smartest kid and can't memorize you know, the Lamentes Melachos, right? They're gonna make a great scrapbook, and they're gonna learn a lot from it.
Right, and I think that's also the key, is because they're allowed to use their creativity, they're successful with that, they tend to internalize the material as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's what teachers use in motivating kids, is that they understand that. And that's why, you know, they're these projects that really involve a lot of, you know, coloring and art and so forth, the kids enjoy the projects, okay? That's motivating.
Right. Even the older kids, like what, you know, in seventh grade, we would think that the kids would not be so inclined or interested in making a scrapbook. I've never seen a kid who's not interested in making that scrapbook and not making it look beautiful.
But, you know, creativity can be used in many ways, and sometimes we really have to think outside the box. And sometimes you can ignite creativity in your child in something outside of school. And the sense of success will spill over.
And it translates across the board, that sense of success, that being able to take a course someplace outside of school that is non-academic, whether it's an art class or some sort of creative food-making class. Very, very powerful. They feel good about what they're doing. They create something beautiful. They have the skills to create it. They can recreate it. Translates across the board. I can be successful.
And so for boys, it might, you know, sometimes it's in sports or in swimming or, you know, but sometimes it can be in art or in music.
And sometimes for boys, I've seen boys who are amazing at memorizing stats, baseball stats. And, you know, they're really good at that. And that's, you know, boy language.
Right. But, you know, it's some boys, but again, it's knowing your child. Some boys are really, you know, some kids can memorize great, but their conceptual understanding isn't as good, you know. But when there's a, you know, a competition to memorize Mishnayos, they can really succeed. And that can motivate them. So what success is, again, the most motivating. Now, in other words, if a task feels too big for your child, how do I get my child to do something when they say, I can't do it, it's too much?
Right. That's actually not so hard to address, because that's really knowing how to take something large. And this is an amazing lesson for life, is to take something that feels overwhelming and large and see if you can break it down into smaller, more manageable pieces. You know, let's just say it's some report that the teacher is given. Okay, let's break this report down into its smaller parts and let's move through each part. That's something that I think we all need as a skill for life. Let's take this large project that we have for work and break it down into its smaller parts so that it's manageable, so that we can do it.
Yeah, I think once you do that for a child, okay, and in other words, or just listening sometimes, careful listening and saying what is too difficult about it. You know, once you break it down and they're still saying, no, I can't do it, well, okay, let's talk about what part you can't do. So maybe we'll do something for you. And just then you listen and you find out what they're afraid of. Okay, you know, and if I, you know, I feel I can't do something, sometimes it's a little part of the project that, you know, that seems overwhelming. And sometimes, you know, kids are really interesting. Sometimes the child is trying to protect, you know, they're thinking, oh gosh, you know, I spoke to this other kid and they said their parents spent $100 on the materials, you know, and my parents can't afford that, so I'm just not going to do it and it won't be a problem. You know, sometimes they're worried about other things, really, and it's you know, so really just listening is very helpful. Again, coaching them. Right? Not doing it for them, but really being there to listen, to coach them and to give them ideas and to let them bounce ideas off of you.
Right, and to be there to give your, you know, approval and your support so that they don't feel like they're, first of all, they feel good because the approval is there. And the support is important because they need to feel like they're not alone in this.
The giving them that support, it shows that, you know, as a parent, they feel that my parent cares about how I do. Okay? They makes them feel good and more connected. Again, going back to the whole thing, if we're supportive, we're motivating them.
One of my favorite expressions in supporting children is always saying, we're not going to leave you out there flapping in the breeze by yourself. Yes. You know, we are going to be with you. You are not going to be flapping out there in the wind by yourself.
And so, you know, the other thing is really give very, for some children, especially children who are more motivated by the power and so forth, want to give them a sense of control. And one of the issues here is really understanding the difference between authority and control. You know, if, in other words, you have children who are always seem to be arguing or, you know, want to, you know, they're going to set the agenda. Very often I can give them choices, right? Where they can make, have decision making power, right? That's meaningful, but it's still on my terms. I'm still the authority, right? But I've ceded some control to them.
Give an example.
Now, even in, just in general, you know, well, let's say we're going to go out to eat, okay? You can have the choice tonight. Are we going for pizza? Are we going for burgers? Now, I decided that we're going out to eat, and now you get to decide what we're going to buy. Or I'm going to buy stuff for a barbecue, right? Well, what do you think we should have? You know, should we have hot dogs or, you know, or hamburgers? You know?
And I think knowing that that's a very powerful tool for that particular child can allow you, us as the parent, to feel very good about that.
Right. And so you can do this in school issues and projects and extracurricular. In other words, I can really set it up so my child feels they really have a sense of control over things.
Right. Or even when, in terms of doing schoolwork, well, do you want to start in the morning, or do you want to start in the early afternoon?
Right, the setting up the schedule, okay? Do you want to get your homework done right away so that you can stay out and play afterwards? Or do you want to really go out and play, but then I'll call you, when I call you in for supper, you know, I have to call you in a half hour early to do your homework, and you can't go out again until it's finished, okay? You have that choice. So it gives a child a sense of control, okay? And again, a sense of that I trust them, I support them, already increasing motivation. You know, so basically, if we want to summarize, number one, success is the greatest motivator. And if you want, you know, if you recognize and reinforce and celebrate their success and even their progress, small successes, you know, it's not, success is not just, you know, being the valedictorian. Success is day in and day out little things, okay? Success can be getting a decent mark on the quiz. I want to celebrate appropriately, you know? I'm not making a party every time you get to, you know, you pass a quiz, but certainly reinforcing and saying, oh, that's great, I'm proud, I'm glad you studied, and look how well you can do.
Right. I also think just complimenting them on making the good decisions that allowed them to succeed. So, you know, you decided that you were going to go all out and make that spectacular cover for the report, and the teacher recognized how hard you worked. That was a really good decision. That was putting your effort in a good place. That was, you know, doing it wisely.
Right. And even if it doesn't always come out perfectly, but, you know, there's reward direction, not perfection. Recognize the effort, not just the result.
Right.
And focus on the positive. Okay. Always look at the positive things first. You know, even like they bring home a report card or test, focus on what they accomplished first. And that's really, that's going to have much more of an impact.
Right. And I think also, you know, taking an active interest in their hobbies and in their activities, but not an intrusive hovering interest, but an active interest and saying, wow, tell me about that, or what are you working on? What's interesting to you? What do you want to do next?
Right. Be an active listener, okay? Have your family do things together as a group, cooperatively, okay? It can be, you know, taking a hike. It could be, you know, playing a game. It could, you know, there are lots of things you can do together.
Right. It could be doing a family chesed together.
Right. Set realistic goals for your kid. Don't expect, you know, don't ask them to do something that's going to be frustrating for them. Okay. And celebrate their risk taking. Okay. It's not easy to try something new or different. Celebrate that when they do.
Right. And I think avoiding comparing them to other children or to their siblings, because, when you know, the comparisons just lead towards resentment and anger, not motivation.
Correct. Exactly. Competition doesn't motivate. Okay. Certainly not in the home environment. Okay? And this idea in school that they're going to compete, you know, it's probably very much overdone. Okay? You want a child competing with themselves. Okay? I don't want them always competing against, because you know what? They're going to come up against kids they can't compete with. So then, do you stop because I can't compete with this one? You know, if I can't get 100 on the test and this one can, do I say, okay, I give up, I can't compete anymore?
No, it's all about your own personal best.
Right. Show them that you value the learning, you know, that you have faith in them. You, again, going back to the idea of that, I trust your abilities, I know you can do it. And so if you want to foster motivation,
it's really about putting a lot of the positive stuff out there. To being loving, to being consistent, to being supportive, to encouraging cooperation, to being concerned about what they're doing without being intrusive, and to being respectful to them.
Right. Just having a family environment that is loving, supportive, encouraging, and concerned, and shows respect for each member of the family, that is going to help you motivate your child. Thank you for joining us again at Parent is a Verb at OU Radio. We'd love to hear your comments. Please email us at parentisaverb@ou.org. Thank you.